So there are some questions that have been sent to me, which I'm in the course of answering. So the following is on the meaning of the word sectarian. Or rather the verse of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, chapter 2, text 1. By the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even an inexperienced boy with no educational culture can be saved from the ocean of nescience, which is full of various types of philosophical doctrines that are like dangerous aquatic animals. The philosophy of the Buddha, the argumentative representations of the Gyanis, the yoga systems of Patanjali and Gautam, and the systems of philosophers like Karnad, Kapila, and Dattatreya are dangerous creatures in the ocean of nescience. By the grace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can have real understanding of the essence of knowledge by avoiding these sectarian views and accepting the lotus feet of Krishna as the ultimate goal of life. Let us all worship Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for his gracious mercy to the conditioned souls. So, question about this. Someone commented on this statement from Srila Prabhupada, calling it a very sectarian view. Srila Prabhupada himself used the word sectarian. So what is the meaning of the word sectarian in this particular context? This statement states that by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one can be saved from all sectarian views. But someone, on reading this, thinks, well, that's a very sectarian thing to say. Sectarian means the Sanskrit word is, let's put it around the other way. The word that's used in languages like Bengali, Hindi, Gujarati, I suppose, is sampradayic. Now, that's a Sanskrit word, but I'm not sure if it's used in that context in Sanskrit itself. I rather suspect that the word sectarian has been, that's been used as the, for the English word sectarian, because that concept, actually we should see the original Bengali for this too. But the concept of sectarianism that comes with that English word, sectarianism, it's not really there in Vedic culture, the same idea that, although we do find, for instance, that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was speaking with the Mayavadis at Varanasi, that after he had defeated them, they admitted that actually we don't really like this Mayavad even before you defeated us, but we're just going along with it because, you know, we're initiated in this Sampradaya and that's what you're supposed to do. You join a Sampradaya and then you just follow it. So the idea of sectarianism in that English word is used to mean that one is a member of a certain sect, which means a branch of a religious faith, and one dogmatically accepts his dogma. All these different religions, they're all based on belief. And so you believe something, and you believe this is right, and it's right. Why is it right? Well, because it's right. This kind of reasoning. Just like if we speak with many Christians, they'll say, well, why do you accept this truth? It was in the Bible. Well, why do you accept the Bible? Because it's the Word of God. Well, how do you know it's the Word of God? Well, because God says so. It's right there in the Bible. So this is called circular reasoning. And if you ask them and say, well, actually it's very easy to shut Christians up. If they pretend to have anything like a reasonable argument, then if they pretend that they're trying to speak with you in a logical and reasonable way, within maximum 5 minutes, you can just shut them up. Because they don't really have any reason or logic. So you can ask them, well, the Muslims say the same thing about the Quran. And they say, well, that's all blasphemy. Yeah, but they say the same thing about you. So how are you to understand intelligently? Or you can say to them that, well, that's what you say about the Bible, but other people say they interpret, other Christians interpret it differently. Or you could say, which Bible? Because there are so many Bibles. Some with more chapters, some with less chapters. They've been, the same Bible has been translated in different ways. I mean, there are so many things. You could say, well, we just believe it's the Word of God. Even though there are lots of problems with the Bible. Then you can ask them about, well, what about slavery in the Bible? And there are all kinds of things which they're about. So sectarianism, it's dogmatic, rigid, fanatic belief without being open to listen to anything else. Because if you listen to anything else, then very quickly your dogmatic, sectarian, fanatic, whoops, I'm defining the word sectarian by using the word sectarian, your belief will be exploded. And then you'll go to hell, because you don't believe. Belief is the main thing. So in the multicultural world that we live in, this is a new term in the West, although in India it's been multicultural forever. But it's a new thing in the West where you don't have one religion. You have all kinds of people living. So the idea there is that live and let live. Don't insist on a particular belief. What you believe, that's all right for you, that's your religion, but then you should accept that other people, they have their beliefs too. Because religion is just a matter of belief. It's not, you know, just belief, right? You can't prove it. It's not scientific or rational. So it's just a matter of belief. So just like in the Western world, when we walk around like this, dressed in these clothes, which are definitely unusual compared to the average dress of the average person in the Western world. Obviously, it quite clearly signifies something religious. So it's quite common that people walk up to us and say, well, what religion do you belong to? What do you believe? The presumption that religion is a matter of belief. And they're all different beliefs. And according to your different beliefs, you belong to a certain sect, but to which in the world of live and let live, it's all right to belong to a different sect. But to insist that this is it, folks, and everyone, this is it, this is the way. And if you don't believe this, you're going to hell. And you get all different sects saying, you have to believe this way, otherwise you're going to hell. Because our priest, John Smith, said so. And another face say, no, John Smith was wrong, and someone else is right. So you have to believe. So this is sectarianism. It causes discord in society, and there's no way you can work it out because it's just belief. There's nothing intelligent about it. And so it caused discord in society. So that we can all live happily, we should just don't be sectarian. As the great sage, no, I shouldn't call him that because none of our acharyas call him. As the great rascal known by the name Ramakrishna Paramahansa said, Jato mat tato pat, or he's said to have said, we don't know if he actually said it. But he's, this is supposed to be his great theological contribution, that as many paths, as many opinions, that many paths. Or sometimes rephrased as, all paths lead to the same goal. In other words, it doesn't matter what you do or what you believe, just, you know, it's all the same anyway. Which puts the end to any theological discussion or any search for the truth. Because the truth is user-defined, whatever you want it to be. Whatever you like, it's all the same. So those we find then in the sphere of religious or spiritual thought, there is fanatical sectarianism, and at the other end of the spectrum, just acceptance of everything, theoretically. I mean, there should be some limits. I mean, I think even those who profess that all paths lead to the same goal you can just believe what you like, it's up to you, they would not have been in favor of that Jonestown cult. What was the name of that guy? He was the head of some cult and then they all killed themselves. Jackson or something? Can't remember. It's forgotten now. Kids growing up in America don't know. It was a big thing at the time and really affected our movement very much because people associated with him, the Reverend something or other. And then he ordered all his followers to kill themselves, which they almost all did. The idea that everything's all okay, everything is all okay and it's all the same, that is for people who don't really want to think about it. Both sides is for people who don't want to think about it much. One type of non-thinker is just blindly believing in one particular path. And another kind of non-thinker says that, well, all the paths are the same. Which, of the two, the second option is makes for social harmony, better social harmony. But it opens the door to things like, for instance, Osho, who was an opportunist, his supporters or those who are in the mood of let everything's okay, they wouldn't agree with this, but even taken from the platform of a neutral platform of morality, not even talking about spirituality, he would be called a very immoral person and a very exploitive person. Very arrogant person. So you can get away with a lot of things if everything's all okay. Just accept everything. So there's people who subscribe to this idea that, well, all paths are the same. You have a right to believe what you believe, but you shouldn't try to impose it on others. You shouldn't try to say that your way is better than others. that's sectarianism, and that is not the proper. They've, without thinking about it very deeply, they, seeing the plurality of religious beliefs and not being very serious to understand what is actually the truth, they sentimentally think that, well, everything is good, everyone's trying to be religious, so that's nice, and God manifests himself in different ways to different people in different times in different places, so we should just accept everything as being good and true, and whatever you think is true for you, that's the truth. Truth is user defined also, which is nonsense actually, because we are controlled beings. If we say, well, my truth is that I am God, you can think like that, but it's nonsense, because we're not God. So all these kinds of wrong ideas, fanatical religiosity, which is responded to, no non-thinking religiosity, the response to which is fanatical atheism, or sentimental inclusivism. Either you're in some rigid box. This is the way. You have to believe it. Or you may reject that. All religion, it's all bogus, they're all cheating. It's actually true, with very few exceptions. So fanatical atheism is the reaction to that. Or just, like this sentimental inclusivism. Everything's good, everything's nice. It's great if you want to believe that, but don't impose it on me. But they've all missed the point, which is Brahma Jignasa. We should try to understand what is the fact, what is the truth. To say that everything is true and all paths are the same, it doesn't work, because someone will say, well, my path is, our prophet has ordered us to convert others. So you say live and let live, to tolerate all religions, but our prophet said not to tolerate. So if you tolerate us, we're going to cut your head off if you don't accept what we say. But nowadays they don't cut heads off so much, but it's more shooting and bombing and all this kind of things. But still, see, sometimes it's they do it the traditional way also. Traditions are good things, I suppose. So, it doesn't work. It's a nice idea, you could say, that we all live together peacefully and happily. But it doesn't, this can't accommodate fanatical religions. And it also creates an ethos of lightening the vital quest for understanding the truth. Who are we? I mean, religion, if you take it seriously, is very serious. Because, I mean, whatever, even if you believe that the world is going to end on the 21st of December, whoops! today's the 22nd of December 2012. My God, the world's still here. We better go and recalculate. Again. And again. And again. Oh, is it? Is that what they say?
No, for 7,000 years.
Postponed for 7,000 years, no. They found another calendar on the 21st of December at 11:59 p.m. No, but the Jehovah's Witnesses, they're always recalculating. It's always just ahead, right? And not most, but all Christians. I mean, in the beginning, they thought Christ is coming he vanished or whatever, he went to Kashmir or wherever he went, or to heaven, whatever you believe. And they thought he's coming again, so they thought it was just a few days' time. It didn't happen, so it's always just been a few days' time. So what were we talking about? The world's going to end. Yeah, so people believe that there's either this kind of fanatical seriousness, or there's... So if you're serious about religion, you should take it seriously, because the world's going to end, and if you don't believe in Jesus, you're going to burn in hell forever. Or if you don't believe in Allah, you're going to go to hell forever. And within that, there are different caveats also, because you have to believe in Jesus and believe in the Pope, otherwise you go to hell forever. Or, if you belong to a different church, you have to believe in Jesus and not believe in the Pope. To believe in the Pope means you're going to go to hell. Or if you're in Islam, you have to be a Shia or a Sunni, and then within Shia, there are all kinds of things, right? Ishmaelites and Aga Khanis and God knows what. Sufis and all this kind of thing. So there's fanaticism. Sufis are supposed not to be fanatical. Wahhabi, they're Sunnis. I was talking about Shias. Wahhabis. Either Wahhab or Allah. Wait a minute, we shouldn't say anything in criticism of any religion, especially that one. Really, you have to be very careful what you say. You should be serious, because their claim is you only have one life, and then if you don't follow, then you're finished. And acceptance of reincarnation, that is sometimes people who don't believe in this, who believe in all your stakes are on one throw of the dice, one lifetime. Either you do it and you get saved, or you join the masses who are burning in hell forever. So they say, well, reincarnation, if you think that, well, people will become lax, because they'll think, well, you know, I didn't be too serious about God in this lifetime, another lifetime. And that's true to some extent. I would think so. That's one reason why you don't find, maybe one reason why you don't find fanaticism in Hinduism and Buddhism and I remember once speaking to a Thai woman. Thai woman means a Buddhist. Not Taiwan, Thailand. So I asked her, I actually spoke Thai, I was speaking to her in Thai. I forgot it all now. So I said, well, you're a normal Thai Buddhist, so you eat pork, right? It's one of the favorite foods in Thailand, when they don't get rats and snakes and grasshoppers. Pork is the favorite food, more than chicken here. I'm not sure exactly, but it's very popular. Ka, yes. That's yes in Thai, if you're a woman. And if you're a man, it's ka. So if you ever go to Thailand, you can remember that. So then I said, so but you eat pork, but you also believe, according to your belief, if you eat pigs, you'll become a pig in your next life. Ka. Ka. Is that the right pronunciation? Ka. It's either ka, 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 or ka. There are five different tones, tonal languages. Only five tones. So So I said, well, don't you think there's something, aren't you afraid of that? Don't you think there's something wrong with it? He said, no, that will, I'll also be happy as a pig. Sanuk. Sanuk is the word. Most important word in the Thai language. Sanuk means pleasures. Pleasure. Sensual pleasure. So, yeah. It's, you know, become a pig and then, you know, then become a human and eat pigs and go on like that. And then, you know, maybe sometime I'll get moksha also. Not very serious about it. So it can produce a lax attitude. Lax means lazy. That's true. But another thing that's also true, this is a logical statement or a tautology, to use a fancy word, is that either reincarnation is true or it isn't. Right? That's it. You don't have to be a great logician to understand that. But whether or not it's a fact doesn't depend on whether we believe it or not. And that's true about all this, that Jesus is the only way, the truth, and the life. Either it's true and it isn't. And whether we believe it or not doesn't alter the fact. Therefore, atato brahma jignasa, we should try to understand the fact. What is the fact? So, to make a long story short, to cut through several lifetimes of philosophical inquiry here, Krishna himself. Bahunam janmanam ante gyanavam mam prapadyate vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlabhaha. After many births of fiddling around with Patanjali, Gotam, Karnad, Kapila, Dattatreya, Mayavad interpretation of Vyasadeva, one can finally accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and surrender to Him. And if you go even further, you'll be very fortunate, then we can understand that Shri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Dahayam Rupanuga Janera Jiva. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, Radha Krishna. He's non-different from Radha and Krishna. He's the life of the followers of Rupa Goswami. So, if to come to this understanding, we are enjoined to understand this, not just accept it blindly. Let's try to understand Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, and try to understand the fact of Krishna's being supreme. And we say, well, that's a sectarian statement to say this is a fact. But no, we say, you apply logic, try to understand. If you're logical, then try to understand what is the fact. Just like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna doesn't say, believe in reincarnation, or otherwise you'll burn in hell forever, because that doesn't work with reincarnation anyway. Because if you burn in hell forever, then there's no reincarnation. But he doesn't say, well, just believe it. Look, I said so, and damn it, I'm God, and just shut up. He doesn't say that. He explains. Dehino smenyata dehe komarang yovanam jara tata dehantara praptihi. And that's pretty straightforward, but for those who don't get it, then it can be explained in some more detail. And vasangsi jirnani yatavihaya navani grihnati naroparani tatashirani vihayajina anyani sangyati navani dehi. So he gives these analogies by which we can understand. Well, the first one isn't an analogy. It's an analysis of how the body is changing, but the person stays the same. Therefore, we can understand that the person is different from the body, and that when the body dies, the person who has not changed while the body has been changing remains unchanged and goes to another body. So that's an analogy, and then an analysis, and then there's an analogy of how just as old clothes, which are the covering for the body, when they become worn out, they're thrown away and replaced with new ones. So in the same way, old bodies, which are the covering for the soul, when they become worn out, they're replaced. So in this way, Krishna, he teaches us. It's not sectarian. That there is a supreme controller is quite, it is an intelligent understanding to accept that there is a supreme controller. That we are controlled. Everyone is controlled. We see order everywhere and control. So it is quite reasonable to accept that there is a supreme controller. And that the fact that we human beings, once they get up beyond the level of simply thinking of food and gross sense gratification, they want to know. They are inquisitive to find out about all kinds of things. And ultimately, the question is, well, how is the whole universe going on? And that's still the question of the scientists. Although they unreasonably reject the possibility that there could be a God because they can't find him in their telescope. So they say, there's no God. Or they say that, well, you could say God is nature. But that's subject to our analysis. So, it's quite reasonable to accept there is a God, and that the very nature that we're inquisitive to try and find out suggests that if there's God, a supreme controller, that he communicates that to us, that's what we call scripture, and among all these scriptures we find that there's actually nothing to compare to that of the Vedic literature, especially Gita and Bhagavatam, which gives us knowledge of the supreme controller. The fact there is a supreme controller, we can accept by logic. Exactly how he controls and what is his personality, that is not within the scope of our trying to understand, our ratiocination. And therefore, we have to simply accept what is the knowledge that is given. Just like it is quite reasonable to accept that there is a supreme authority in this country, whether a president, a prime minister, or a dictator, or whatever, it would be quite unreasonable not to accept that. Exactly who that person is, what he looks like, what he likes to eat, who his wife is, how he likes to dress, his personal, the points about his personality that we cannot understand by any amount of speculation. Therefore, we simply have to take knowledge from those who know. And he knows himself, he gives knowledge of himself in Gita. But that knowledge is also not simply ram it down your throat kind of knowledge, but it is non-sectarian presentation of spiritual knowledge. Therefore, it's non-sectarian. To say that no one should be sectarian and all the views should all be accepted, that itself is a sectarian opinion. Why? Why do you insist on this? Why? We find that the United Nations Charter of Human Rights, we take it as self-evident that all human beings should have equal rights to this, that, and the other. Why do you accept it as self-evident? I'm a human being also. I don't accept it as self-evident. Who are you to speak for the whole human race and impose it on us and go to war on the name of human rights? So you're sectarian. Your so-called non-sectarianism is another form of sectarianism. So how can, if you really want to be non-sectarian, then you have to come to the truth, which transcends all human belief systems. So try to find out what the truth is. You may say, well, your Krishna consciousness is just a dogmatic belief, like ever. So come and discuss and see. If you say it's just the same, then you come and discuss, and we will convince you that we are right and you are wrong. There should be some ultimate truth. Otherwise, why are you searching? Why are you trying to find out? Or if you say that there is no ultimate truth, that is a statement of ultimate truth, that the ultimate truth is nondescript or that there is no one entity. You are making an absolute statement. If you say there is no ultimate reality, that is an absolute statement. There's no absolute reality. That is an absolute statement. What gives you the right to say that? What authority do you have to say that? That is your sectarianism. So non-sectarianism, so-called non-sectarianism, is itself another kind of sectarianism. So we should come to the platform of the truth. And on the platform of the truth, we can understand that everything else, which the belief systems, they're all sectarian. So this is in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's generally we don't preach these things, first of all, to newcomers. If a newcomer sees this, he may think it's sectarian. But anyway, we can distribute Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita also. Let people come and we'll discuss that we are not sectarian, you are sectarian. This is the platform of the truth. Something must be the truth. And to say that no one can know it or everything is an equal representation of it, no, we don't accept that. It's not all the same. This is right. Come and we'll discuss, we'll prove. So that's the answer to that, and that's all I'm going to do for now, unless there's any question on that. It's all the same things. We say the same thing over and over again, but it's just the question comes in a little bit different form, and then devotees get, oh, how do I answer? It sounds sectarian. It's the same thing. It's just that word sectarian threw you out, that's all. You got bewildered by the term sectarian. Yeah.
Some devotees think that in order not to be sectarian, that we have to present books. Like, for example, Srimad Bhagavatam, there are some devotees who are writing, they're trying to...
Writing books with Srimad Bhagavatam modified to be non-sectarian. But how can you be? Because in the very beginning, it's dharma projita kaitava atra. All cheating religions are kicked out. So, I mean, actually it's already non-sectarian, but if you want to present it as non-sectarian in the eyes of the sectarian non-sectarians, how is it possible? Because it's non-sectarian aims at all-inclusiveness, whereas the Bhagavatam is immediately exclusive. Dharma projita kaitava atra paramo nirmatsaranasatam can only be understood by people who are qualified by being non-envious. Generally, the envious scholars, the academics, they talk of the Puranas as sectarian texts. There's Shaiva Puranas, and then there's Vaishnav Puranas, so they say they're sectarian. Oh, another point, yeah, that word sampradayak. That is a Sanskrit term, but that is a respectable term in Vedic culture. To be sampradayak, if you're sampradayak, you're in a respectable position. If you're not sampradayak, if you're not in a sampradaya, then you're just nowhere. You should be in a sampradaya means that you have. Oh, that's another important point. Shall I speak on that now? I could do. Yeah, all right. Talking about parampara. Sampradaya means it comes down in parampara. Now, in the modern age, all right, let's tell this anecdote first of all. A few weeks ago, I was in Navi Mumbai at the apartment of Shyam Gopinath Das, whose wife is from China. She's not only Chinese, but she's from China. You can be Chinese and you can be from Singapore. She's from China. Chinese from China. So I had, and still have, some pain in my foot. So she told me that she brought out her Chinese medicines and told me that she had studied Chinese medicine in the oldest parampara. There are different schools of Chinese medicine, and she studied in the oldest parampara. Now, in modern medicine, they'll say, see, latest discovery. But she said that oldest to establish that it's the most authorized. What is older should be better. Whereas in the modern age, we have the idea whatever is new is better. Whether it's medicine, the latest medicine, or whatever it is, new improved surf. It's always new. It's been new since I was a kid, and probably before that. New improved. It's all the idea that by science we are discovering new things and making the world better. And we're always discovering newer and newer and newer things. So whatever is newest is best. But the parampara outlook is just like we find in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, evaṁ parampara prāptam evaṁ rājā śrayo viduhu sakāle neha mahata yoga naṣṭa parantapa. That this ancient, well, he doesn't say it, it comes in the next verse. So this knowledge, Krishna's referring to what he spoke to Vivasva, which was a long time ago, Vivasva. So this is coming down, this is received in parampara and understood in that way by the saintly kings, but it has become spoiled in the great course of time, very long course of time. It has become spoiled, or otherwise by the mighty influence of time. Sakala yamata. Yeah. So then the next verse he says, "Sa eva yang mayate dya yoga prokta puratana." So I'll now speak that again to you. This very ancient knowledge of yoga. So it's a different outlook. The idea that if it's very old, it must be very good. Whereas in the modern age, the idea of it's very new, it's very good. Because the idea is that what comes in the beginning there is the ancients, the wise, the knowledgeable people. And if it's still the same as it was, as it in the old time, that's very good. Whereas if it's new, it means someone changed something and they messed it up. So it's a completely different outlook. The understanding that at the beginning Bhagavan gave knowledge to Brahma, and then Brahma gave it to others. And there are different parampara. There are parampara, I mean, there's medicine parampara, Chinese medicine parampara. Then there's Ayurveda, and within the Veda there are different shakas, most of which are lost, different paramparas. So there are then within the Puranas there are paramparas, the paramparas of different martial arts and systems of fighting. I mean, even probably in different homes there are yogurt paramparas, how to make yogurt in different, and in different homes they'll make chapatis differently, and the girl will come, she's married, she's 12 years or 13 years old, and she's coming to a different home. She's making chapatis the way she learned at home. And they tell her, no, in our home we do it differently. In your home, very thin, in our home, very thick. That's one item maybe in the matching for the marriage. They see, oh, thick chapati, oh, not matching, that's one point against. So there are different paramparas even of how to make chapatis. And you'll find that grandmother's recipe, you'll find, I think, grandmother's recipe of jam or something. Jam means something different in Indian languages. It's a fruit, right? Jam. Whereas in jam in the West means, what do they call that? That, they may. Oh, I just can't remember the name now. They make that just like from rose petals or something like that. Gulkan. Yeah, like that. So that's like jam. So the idea that the old tradition, they know how to do things well and better, and now they have all new ideas. What's happening, all the different paramparas all over the world, they're getting lost. Just like to learn how to, what was that? To take the water from the ground with bulls. And people knew how to do that for generations. Now it's lost. The parampara is lost. Because now, how do you do it? You press a button. And the water comes. The water is coming up from under the ground. So you just press a button. You don't have to learn how to. There's. Well, there are different systems, but how to? What's that? There's different. I don't even know the words. Different trays, and they're on a. In a line, in a circle, and the bulls go round and round, and there's a, what's that called? There are two wheels next to each other. Axle, there's axle, and I don't even know them. Yeah, and then, I mean, that's one way of doing it, and then the water falls down in a ditch. People don't know anymore how to do all this, because they just press a button. So there are paramparas for all kinds of things. So many Vedic arts, dance, drama, making deities, many of them are lost, or being lost, because new ideas are coming in. So the Vedic understanding is that old is, if it's older, it's better. Not only Vedic, you see China, ancient culture, and probably everywhere it was like that until they got this idea that new is better. And people are very much convinced of this. It's new, it's better. Whatever is new must be better. Whereas our outlook is quite different. That old is better. We are convinced of that. One reason we're convinced is because the same thing. If you look at the commentaries of the Acharyas, going back hundreds of years, it's the same message as today. Not that it changed. In different paramparas, so-called paramparas, you see that things change. Nanda Kumar, he made an analysis. There was the guru of Shivananda, he was a Shivananda Swami, the famous Swami of Rishikesh. So he was a traditional Mayavadi sannyasi, sampradayak. Then Shivananda, he had some idea that, well, we should also do something to help the people, and because he was a doctor previously, and used to be that doctors became doctors because they wanted to benefit people instead of they just wanted money and prestige, which is nowadays mostly in this country, at least, is what people become doctors for. So he added this in what you might call a genuinely altruistic spirit, as genuine as worldly altruism can be. So he combined that, and then giving knowledge of herbal medicines and all this kind of stuff. So he changed it a bit. And then one of his disciples was Chinmayananda, who was, he's different to Shivananda. And he was, bring Bhagavad Gita to the public with his own ideas of what gyan are. So he became another prominent, more prominent than Shivananda probably overall. And then he has his disciples. Oh, there's one in Bangalore who's like really, you know his name? I can't remember. Right, but he's disciple of Chinmayananda, but it's like really modern, somewhat Vedic, but all very appealing to the Bangalore IT workers, the young people, and it's very modernized, and it's all, you know, stress relief and all that kind of thing. So it's really, it's like each generation is different. He also this Yogi Mahesh, his guru was traditional Mayavadi sannyasi. Then he made his speculations to popularize what he called transcendental meditation in the West. And then out of him, two of his so-called disciples, they took things from him and added some more popularism. And one of them was Deepak Chopra, and another was Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. Ravi Shankar just died, the sitarist. I wish the other one would too. Whoops, excuse me. Delete that. Could do a great service to the world by just not talking all his misleading people, cheating people. So you can see how they're just changing it. The idea that we have to keep it the same is not there. It's just, they take something and add their own speculation and they come up with something new. Whereas in very traditional societies, things would just be the same generation after generation after generation. The teachings, the lifestyles, the practices, things just didn't change for generations. Why should anything change? The sun rises in the east every day, and the seasons remain constant, and the food we eat is the same, and what? This whole idea in the model, we have to change, new, improved, better. Just like this Microsoft, they're always bringing out different versions of Windows. Why don't they just stick with one? If it's fairly okay, well, you know, why do you always have to change it? Well, because they want to make more money, that's one reason. And software companies also need to make money. So they always, so that's one reason. But from the user's point of view, it would be much better if they just, well, it'd be much better if Windows never existed in the first place, but that's a moot question. If we just left it all to Steve Jobs, or something, would have been better in the first place. But always this idea: you have to change, you have to find out and do something better. It's the It's the attitude of a highly agitated mind. That's just not satisfied. It can't remain satisfied with doing the same thing. Just like in our Krishna consciousness world, we do the same thing. More, we get up early in the morning, we start, we do the same thing. I'm getting fed up with this. Why don't we, instead of having Mangaladi, why don't we have a juggling act or something? It's just getting boring having the same Mangaladi every time. Or why don't we, you know, we've been worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu long enough. What about, you know, lots of people are worshipping Sai Baba. Why don't we try that out? But no, same. If you get the right thing, then why change it? It's just like if you have a good recipe for chapatis, they come out, you know how to make chapatis nicely, you got it down, then you just make the same chapatis every day. I mean, why do you have to change it? In India, people eat the same. In the West, it's also every day you have to eat something different. Well, we had pizza yesterday, so today we have to have macaroni. We had macaroni yesterday, so we had pizza 2 days ago. That was cheese with tomato. What else is there? That was, I don't know enough about pizzas to me. Put some different spices in, whatever. It has to be different, always different. But in India, people lay the same food. On special day, they'll have some special, but even the special items are the same, just like on Pongal, they have the same special items. It's not that they invent something else. So this idea, you always have to change and be different, it's just a symptom of a highly agitated mind, that's all. So to be sampradayic, which word is used for sectarian, that's considered respectable. That you're not an upstart, that you're just making something of your own thing. Just like these Yogi Mahesh always claimed himself to be a disciple of his guru, whatever his guru is. I can't remember his name. You know his name? No. So, because everyone in India used to know that if you're going to set yourself up as or take the position of a teacher, you have to have a teacher. That is your qualification to be a teacher, that you have a teacher. Not that I was in my LIC office and one day I realized that I was Kalki Bhagavan. That is not acceptable within the Vedic system. You have to receive knowledge in parampara. And your qualification is that I don't change it. Like Prabhupada writes in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita in his introduction. If I have any credit in presenting this, is that I didn't change it. Whereas someone, Bhagavad Gita for the modern age. What the hell? Why for the modern age? It's for every age. New interpretation of Bhagavad Gita. Immediately you should kick that person in the head. That's parampara. I heard it from Prabhupada. Always having to show something new. No, Prabhupada always says, if I have any credit in this regard of presenting Bhagavad Gita as it is because I simply presented what I received. That is the qualification, that is the credit to be sampradayak. So that's the real meaning of sampradayak. So that is used as sectarian. That word is used for sectarian, but it's really a mismatch of words. Sampradayak is very honorable, whereas the idea of being sectarian, that is dishonorable. Whether you take it from the platform of the absolute truth, to be a follower of Gautam, Karad, Kapila, Dattatreya, Patanjali, or a misrepresentative follower of Vyasadeva, that is sectarian. Or if you take it from the point of view of all the opinions are the same, and if you have a specific opinion, that's sectarianism. So either way, sectarianism is it's not a good term. Sectarian. So to match the term sampradayak with it, which traditionally has a very positive connotation, and to recast that in the light of this mumbo jumbo, all is one denigration of sectarianism, and call that sampradayak. In other words, to say that if you have a specific understanding which sets itself above others, it claims to be the truth, then that is itself a fault. But the actual Vedic process is not to accept all opinions as the same. People say, oh, Ramakrishna, he brought thousands of years of Hindu philosophy to the culmination by saying that everything's all the same. But that's not the process of what they call Hindu philosophizing. The system is that you adhere to a sampradaya, but if someone defeats you, then you have to join that sampradaya, because it's accepted that there is a truth, and that there is a specific truth. It's not dependent on the individual's opinion. This is an extremely, in the guise of being accommodating and humble and equal to all, it's an extremely arrogant hypothesis that everyone can, you can just have the truth as you like it. According to you. According to who? A little bug. Our cosmic significance is no more than that of a bug. So, and we user defined truth. No, there is a truth which is independent of our opinions. And the Vedas, they all seek for that. Sarve Veda Yat Padama Mananti. So what is that? That is to be ascertained. Different sampradayas say different things. So we should come to the point. Vaidaishya sarvairahameva vedyaha. Krishna is the goal of all the Vedas. So this term sectarian, Srila Prabhupada is using it, and he himself is being considered sectarian for saying this is the truth and everything else is sectarian, because everyone else says that also. So you may think that, well, Prabhupada's just another person who's saying that, and then you come and discuss. Then we'll see what is the fact and what is sectarian. And this is ridiculous. People say, well, all opinions are... You can't live like that. It's not practical. For instance, if someone has the opinion, I will drive on, in India we drive on the left side of the road, so I'll drive, well, actually a lot of people do that. They drive on the wrong side of the road, but that's another reason why there are so many accidents on the roads in India. You're supposed to drive on a particular side of the road. See, every Indian's a philosopher, Mayavadi, that's why they're all driving on the wrong side of the road, I guess. Showing their own independent thoughtfulness. Another explanation is that they're drunk. That's often an explanation also. So, or if you think that, I mean, there are so many examples you could give. You say that, well, if you say, well, all opinions are the same, so we can tell people, so everything's all the same. So I'd like you to demonstrate that by, after you eat stool, just eat it again. Recycling. Conservation of energy. There might be some people who are so stupid and they want to show their point that they'll do it. They may do it also. But it's disgusting. So, Hare Krishna. I'll finish that unless there are any questions about this. No. All right, you have a question. You're thinking of having a question. You have a question? You sure? Absolutely sure? Okay, then ask it.
So we know that Prabhupada followed his guru.
We know that Prabhupada followed his guru.
But if Gaudiya Math,
Gaudiya Math,
they'll say that Prabhupada was different.
They'll say he was different. He was different, yes. That's also a fact. Everyone is different. That's our philosophy, right? Not that everyone's all the same. He was different to his guru. That's true. Every guru is one. You know that? Guru is one. Because all gurus teach the same thing. If they're actual gurus. But exactly how the details of how they present it may be different. So, we should find the thread of parampara and not say, well, Prabhupada, he preached in America and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati preached in India. So you see, they're different. Means they're not the same. It's true in some ways they're not the same, but you have to find where the sameness is in the essential points, not in the non-essential points. Some things may be more controversial. Just like, for instance, Srila Prabhupada, he let women live in the ashrams in the West, which had been allowed at the Yogapeet for women devotees, not young, unmarried women devotees, but it was allowed to some extent. That's closed down now by Jyoti Maharaj after many years. He stopped that. At this. But that is considered very important among sadhus, that you don't live with women unless you're bogus. But Prabhupada also insisted on no illicit sex. So does that constitute a departure? No. But it's not a departure, but it's a means to achieve the end of engaging people in devotional service. And actually you'll find that there are many things Gaudiya Math used to criticize ISKCON for. Why do they use chemical cloth dye instead of the traditional rock dye? Why do they give sannyas to Westerners? And pretty much everything that they criticize, they now do also. Which is maybe unfortunate if they continue that trend, considering some of the things that we do. So, the essence, if we maintaining the essence. Actually, I was just reading yesterday, there's a conversation of Srila Prabhupada in April 1977, which was just before he stopped extensively talking altogether, in which he was saying, don't have Brahmacharini ashram anymore. He said, they won't be Brahmacharini, they'll be Vyabhicharini, which means fallen. And then Tamal Krishna Maharaj asked Prabhupada, then what to do with all the women? Prabhupada said, then marry them. Therefore, one man can marry three, four. He said, polygamy. So it said that Prabhupada was against polygamy, but that probably his last reference to it, he was supporting that. So, I mean, Prabhupada knew there were problems with that. Prabhupada himself said, Srila Prabhupada said that man is good and woman is good, but the combination is bad. Of course, it's not always bad. It can be, It can be good for spiritual life if husband and wife cooperate in Krishna consciousness. Anyway, that's another topic altogether. But, it wasn't that Prabhupada just threw everything. The point I'm making is that Srila Prabhupada just didn't throw out everything, and it wasn't that he was unnecessarily being extremely liberal, but he just saw there was a need for spreading Krishna consciousness. And he was prepared to make adjustments also as he went along. So, yes, he was different from his Guru Maharaj, but not in essence. He spread Krishna consciousness all over the world. So there is difference, yes. There will always be difference between one guru and the next. Especially in the modern world, where things are changing and already changed so much from the tradition, that there will be adjustments will require to be made. But really, the old is better. Rather than just adjusting everything, trying to adjust everything to the new ways, which are all new ideas of social organization, they're all coming from mental speculation, from the modes of passion and ignorance, out of bogus philosophies, coming from Freud and Marx and feminism and all these ideas. So it's better. That's Srila Prabhupada wanted to establish Varnashram as far as possible, because that's the best template on which Krishna consciousness can be practiced. It's trying to practice Krishna consciousness according to the behavioral norms and the cultural values of a completely bewildered society. It's not going to be so very helpful. Anyway, that's getting into another topic. So, Hare Krishna.